own piece of history with the union, like when you joined with the union.
67 in May, I've been at CRLA for 3 months. It was sufficiently irrelevant. So Leroy got a hold of me on Saturday and quit working for the union in May of 67. Till resigned as general counsel in 79, and then stayed on to try to negotiate the rest of the vegetable contracts until 81. Left in March of 81, March 1st of 81.
And those were the lettuce contracts, right? The lettuce.
Yeah. Okay. Right, some of those, some imperial stuff. Did all right, some of this didn't get us done in imperial.
And so you were with CRLA before that?
Yeah, just for about 3 months.
And where?
McFarland.
In McFarland?
Yeah. And it was, the Perelling and Eddie strike was going on there.
Oh, yeah.
The hassle with the Teamsters.
Yes, one of the.
Matter of fact, that's when I met Father Boyle then, because the first thing I did when I got to the union was to go to Burlingame with Caesar and Dolores to try to negotiate a jurisdictional pact with these jerks. Mm-hmm. It was Grammy. I don't know who else, but I remember Father Boyle was there and Rabbi Glazier was there. Mm-hmm. And they sort of kept the lid on. Mm-hmm. And it needed to be kept on because Fred Perelling and Eddie would not speak directly to the union. He spoke to his attorney, Mr. His name is White from the Nottingham Myers, and White would say, talk to me. My client tells me to tell you, tell your client. That kind of atmosphere. That's what it was. And he wouldn't let it, but Caesar would just look straight ahead.
Caesar was in the room.
Caesar and Dolores were in the room, and it was like they just didn't acknowledge that they were people. And so Rabbi Glazier and Father Boyle, and there was a third person there, and I don't remember who it was.
Yeah, was that Episcopal priest?
Probably was. But they tried their damnedest to keep the thing on the track, and I thought their presence was pretty useful.
When you think back about the about all of the people like Gene Boyle and others out of the institutional church who participated over the years, what do you think it was about Caesar and the farm worker movement that attracted those people?
Well, I think it's different for different folks. I think there were some, like Father Higgins, Bishop Donnelly from Connecticut, pretty wise in terms of labor. And I think they just saw it as their role to be there, to help things along, to sort of correct the tendencies of both sides. In the Delano negotiations, for example, we finally had enough heat on them, so they talked to us. Early in, I don't know, it's going to be even in March, with Steinberg, and then I think, I can't remember the order of the contracts. I think DeSpoto and Bianco came before the rest of Arvin Lamont, and then by the time we got into the rest of Coachella, the heat was really on. We didn't really need any mediators. But Higgins was nobody's fool, and I think he knew that his presence would sort of help everybody sort of move it along. I mean, he believed in labor. He'd been involved with the AFL for a long time. It wasn't so much the nonviolence attracted a lot of people, but I don't know with a guy like Higgins that the nonviolence and all the rhetoric having a virgin, I don't think that attracted him. I think he knew that he could perform a useful role. Mm-hmm. He's a pretty tough guy.
Yes.
And he and Bishop Donnelly had been, Donnelly had 29 years experience as a mediator in Connecticut. Yeah. And so when we were playing around, Caesar was really cute about it. He'd take off, right? And then Donnelly would put incredible pressure on Dolores. And he put the heat on. And it was always this game about, they never would do anything against the boycott, but, they had ways of sending their little signals about how cooperative and uncooperative they'd be. And I think they kept us together with some of those growers when they knew that we were farther apart than they told us we were. I mean, I think they just really knew how to put the heat on. They did that a couple times in 70. In Salinas, even the bishops couldn't do anything because the Teamsters were involved at that point, and nobody could understand the Teamsters. You'd get in a room with the Teamsters, and you didn't know was sad because they were inscrutable. It was so strange. You know, the English language didn't mean anything that the Teamsters needed, so they weren't that useful. But then there were other folks that were different from Higgins and Dunn. And looking at that movie today made me realize how they really, their presence on the picket lines, you know, in Coachella, I've forgotten how nasty things got.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at that movie after a few years and you wonder why more people didn't get popped.
Yes.
And I think a lot of it had to do with the presence of all kinds of people from the church, all kinds of ministers. Same thing in Salinas in 70.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Father Duran was a cool cucumber. And he ended up running, I think, the books for the Union. But just the way they could channel that energy into, you know, parades and masses, I think that was really, really crucial. Now, those folks, I think, were there because they realized that we were serious about nonviolence.
Mm-hmm.
And even though people weren't angels and misbehaved once in a while, compared to what could have happened, it was pretty, you know, it was pretty low-key. And I think if you look at later on when there weren't as many clergy involved, when the Union wasn't acting quite as inclusively as it used to, and you look at the 79 strike, the Imperial, it was a nasty strike. There was a lot of rough stuff down there.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, one of the things that Marshall has to do tomorrow is meet with Ellen Eggers because there's a trial going on about strike violence. And, they, you know, they try and do things, having a lot of demonstrations, but I don't know that the clergy were as much in evidence at that point. Now, whether that was because they were invited to be or whether it was once a law was passed, you know, there's an institutional framework to operate on, there was something missing in that strike. I wasn't there because I was arguing Babbitt in the U.S. Supreme Court, but I just remember getting calls from folks. It was a rough strike. And none of the strikes where the clergy were around was rough. And I think that's an important thing.
I remember Coachella.
Yeah.
I remember being out there myself with the former ministry board. And,
sure.
And we were out on one of those really good picket lines. And we were face to face with these goons. I mean, that was scary.
Big guys screaming.
I was really scared.
They were screaming and swearing. I mean, it was nonstop. It was nonstop vilification of people. It was unbelievable. Yeah. Then you add to that, in Coachella, it wasn't all that bad because at least the cops were more even-handed.
Yeah.
You knew the current. You know, it really was incredible that there was not a lot of violence because not only did you have the Teamster Unions, but you had the Kern County Sheriffs acting like a private army in the growers. And you had basically no effective law enforcement. District Attorney's Office was ineffective, whether because they were incompetent or deliberately ineffective, we never knew. The sheriffs were running around acting with unreasonable force. And still, it was pretty low-key. A few rocks got thrown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a few pictures of women whacking the cops with the sticks because they're dragging their husbands off. But other than that, it was non-violent.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was crucial.
You think that's one of the reasons that Caesar worked hard to see to it that there were clergy involved?
Yep, I do. I think that when you look back on just what made the Union work in those days, it was that peculiar set of alliances that maybe labor had in the 30s, but labor certainly had sort of grown off on its own. So you had the elements from labor, you had all kinds of kids and volunteers, but you had all kinds of people from the clergy there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was important for a lot of reasons, and one of the reasons was to keep it cool. And I think he knew that it would tend to be effective with some folks, just having people around. You know, in 68, when we fasted, we were giving a lot of pious speeches in Filipino Hall, and a lot of people weren't listening.
Mm-hmm.
They were really frustrated at that point with Jamara. And that fast sort of, that's where Father Duran was really effective, mobilizing the people that had masses every night out of the 40 acres. That was, you know, that fast was Red Gandhi, but I think he also knew the overtones it had for the folks of the Union, and he had the church involved heavily. A lot of people didn't like it, too. I remember Fred Hirsch and some of that, you know, they people left the meeting and that. So it was a commitment to a certain kind of, you know, religious involvement that really offended a lot of, fairly ideological left types.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an internal crisis. I didn't want to deliver use of religion to keep cool. Mm-hmm.
So Caesar really at that point then was making a decision about whose help he most wanted.
Oh, I think so. In some ways, because there was a certain cost internally. I remember these big arguments. We all need to be in the office and lick them scans to get stuff done. There was really a little bit, something else was going on at that point, because that event and the masses sort of helped, and just organizing around it, you know, and then the prayers down, I don't know, were you in Bakersfield when you left court in the contempt? That was an interesting scene. I hadn't thought about that for a long time until I saw the movie. There were 3,000 people in that courthouse, and in the room itself. It was very quiet, and the Kern County officials were going crazy. They were scared to death having this many Mexicans in court, but just the whole kind of religious overtone really just blew the county away. There was no. I remember going to that courthouse before that event and knowing I was on enemy turf.
Mm-hmm.
After that day, that was our territory. It really was. And mobilizing all that energy to do something like that was, you know, it was very well calculated to mold a union, and it did. Those masses every night in that demonstration at the courthouse, what it did, the folks that left the union disagreed, but I think what it did is we had like 9 ranch committees at the time. I remember Leroy was going to Paul Son and Almaden and some of the wine companies we had trying to put together a medical plan. But he was clearly in 9 different worlds in that event, and just the way the masses brought people together in the demonstrations around the courthouse, that sort of really helped mold the union for the first time, I think it was inseparable, sort of the bringing together of all those people, all that ritual, that it really was important.
And that was 68.
That was 68. Mm-hmm. That would have been maybe March of 68, before Kennedy came out. Remember Bobby came out? I guess he came out when Fast ended.
Yeah.
That's when he came out.
I was there for that.
That was in Florida. This was during the initial stages of Fast. I think some important things happened. And I think there's a big part of it. And those left us that didn't like it took off. And that was too bad.
At that point, were people still attempting to make the accusations that the union was had communists in it?
Oh, yeah.
Still going on?
Oh, yeah. It was always going on. You know. It was going on as late as 73. I mean, a lot of that, when you look at those stuff on the picket line, there's a lot of Jew baiting and red baiting, and you're not a priest. And, I mean, all this junk. I mean, yeah, it always bubbled along, but the fact that there were folks, I don't think Caesar was deliberately wanting to get people like Fred or other folks out of the union because they were sort of left, because they weren't communists, you know, they just had certain pretty tough ideological positions, and religion really didn't fit in.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of missed a certain element of what made a lot of the people in the union tick. But yeah, there was a lot of that stuff. In the local press, growers used it.
When you think back, what are some of your recollections about the role that Chris and the ministry, the farmworker ministry, played?
Yeah, Chris was probably the most crucial guy of all, I think, in terms of rounding up support, both in the cities and when there would be some kind of crisis in the fields, making sure there were people around. It took a lot of work. And positioning himself, is he at La Paz now, or is he, mm-hmm. he's still at La Paz? See, when he was not part of the union, he was sort of positioned out there. It was like a separate kind of voice. That's the other thing I liked about Higgins. Mm-hmm. A certain independent point of view, even though they were working with the union, that I thought was important.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris, I remember going to meetings in LA when people would get the labor line from us, And just having the presence of somebody like Chris or other people around sort of gave it a different dimension. And I don't think people by that time would automatically swallow hook, line, and sinker with people from the labor union or singing. I think you needed that dimension. I think you helped provide. I think there was just a hell of a lot of hard work that you did just rounding up folks. Those people didn't end up on those picket lines by magic.
This is true.
Yeah, it took a lot of work. A lot of work. And I think that was crucial. I wasn't on the boycott line, so I don't know how the church helped out there, but I think just from talking to not so much Marshall, but Jessica, Chris, and the folks really helped round up. I mean, you go to churches and find places to stay. All the basics, where you sleep, where you eat. How do you find out how to get around the city? You know, who are going to be your initial guides? You know, remember Marcos Munoz going to Boston, he can't read, so he memorized buildings. That's how he got around Boston. But, you know, there'd always be some priest or somebody around that somebody had contacted that would, you know, just get the basics done, just make it possible to survive. And I think Chris was pretty central to all that for a lot of years. Also, in the legislative fights that developed, it was good to have all kinds of different networks of people to sic on the folks in Sacramento. I remember I'd go to Sacramento, well, this after the war in 73, when it was apparent that we really needed to have some mechanism to get it resolved. We needed to have a law that regulated elections. I go up there, you know, and you deal with these assembly and these senators, and you go nuts. They wanted a million different things. And I was always invariably, you know, I'd drive in about 2 hours out of Sacramento, I'd always stop and call Caesar and say that what they needed was a real good screwing. Just let's really put the heat on these bastards. Because that's what it always boiled down to. You couldn't possibly deal on their terms without either becoming a whore yourself or going nuts for both. So you needed to put the heat on. So how did you get the heat put on? Well, we had one network through labor. Chris had a bunch of religious people. And, you know, we always do that. You always play those games. And I think that whole network of people that the migrant ministry was able to tap and organize helped put the heat on. When we finally got the law off the ground there were a lot of people that made a lot of calls. And there was a lot of heat put on. And I think that's just another element of having that whole other network out there. Mm-hmm. You know, it was really effective.
What year was Prop 14?
Prop 14. Yeah, that was 76. That was in 76 when Carter ran.
Chief Boyle and I were trying to remember this morning.
Yeah.
He didn't think it was the year that he ran for assembly.
When did he run for assembly?
75.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. A big rise on some people.
Wait, do we have assembly elections in odd years?
Well, you know, I think it was 74.
Yeah,
because, you have assembly elections in even there.
The Catholics were somehow really able to be helpful in the negotiating situation, weren't they?
Sure.
I always had this question whether it was really helpful or if it was sort of, you know, an ego trip. Wanted to do something.
Well, you know, you could see the self-congratulatory stuff at the subsequent press conferences. Bishop Donnelly, especially from Connecticut, was good. Higgins was real good. In his own quiet kind of way, Roger Mahoney was good. Bishop Donahoe of Fresno, I don't remember him being terribly effective, but I never knew if that was because he was a little bit older or because he was trapped from his constituencies. He was nice, and you know he came and did that mass at Juan de la Cruz's funeral, and he was always there. But just in terms of knowing how to put the heat on, in sort of a mediating role, it was really Donnelly from Connecticut and Higgins. I remember, you know, Caesar, especially in Bakersfield, the federal building, ducking out at appropriate times so that Donnelly and Higgins could let Dolores and I know just what life is all about. And then put the heat on, and then we'd go and put the heat on him. The first thing he'd play is a little game, you know, try to play it both ways. Didn't want to be caught, didn't want to be pinned and argue with bishops. You know, that was our job. And then didn't want the bishops putting any heat on him either. But the messages were delivered pretty effectively. There was all this, it was almost kind of like this Oriental, you know, maze of relationships, because the bishop didn't want to confront Caesar directly and tell him what a jerk he was and some of that stuff. So he'd tell us. And it would work. Because he'd get the message and he'd get both. Because if one thing, you know, I spent more time negotiating with my own clients than I ever did with the growers. I mean, you're talking pretty stubborn folks. Wouldn't be a union if they weren't stubborn, right? And Donnelly and Higgins knew that. And so they would supply that little punch to get it done. And they would put meat on the growers, too. Because I remember talking to some of their attorneys later and saying, you know, those guys, you know, they do. They thought they were going to get some guy that just said mass in the church. But, you know, Donnelly did have 29 years experience in labor in Connecticut, and he knew what he was doing. He knew it pretty well.
What kind of heat would the bishops put on you?
Well, they would just point out how stupid the positions were, and then they'd point out how they really didn't have to support the boycott, and, you know, and do you really want a contract, don't you? And, I mean, just speeches, you know. I've been involved for 29 years, and you know, somebody like Dolores, that kind of stuff affected her. Mm-hmm. She didn't want to be told that she was a bad little girl by the bishop. Mm-hmm. And he would just bang away and bang away. And you're supposed to somehow, and every once in a while there'd be sort of a glimmering of what the growers' positions might be. But I always wondered if they were keeping us together, you know, with their own sort of version of the facts. And mm-hmm. this, just the timing of the way they would raise issues, and the way they treated Caesar very differentially, and then if he disappeared, then they'd lecture you about the chances of blowing it, and their assessment of how close we were to ending the ball game, and did we want a contract with the Spoder or the Yankum or not, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It was effective, you know, because I don't think they endorsed the boycott. Do you remember if they did or not? I think what they did is sort of say they were going to hold it in abeyance. But there was always something that somehow there was the implicit threat there mm-hmm. that they could either be cooperative or uncooperative on the boycott. Yeah. They were not advocates in the way Chris was. Both roles are crucial. Mm-hmm. You know, Chris was an upfront advocate, and sometimes I could sense that he had no, you know, tolerance or not a lot of tolerance and didn't want to stomach too much of that above-it-all attitude that the bishops would assume. But it had its use when it came to resolving things. It had a place.
I think the bishops endorsed the lettuce boycott in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
Would that have been when, after that moratorium, there was that moratorium and then it picked up again?
Well, 1974, see.
I'm
talking 69 and 70 yeah. when we got the first contracts.
That was earlier than.
Yeah.
They weren't even.
They never.
As an organization, they weren't together on that early.
No, they weren't. Maybe after the Teamsters did their number,
yeah.
they endorsed in 73, after the contracts were taken away. Well, you know, and they came down and conducted those polls and elections of the workers.
Yeah, in Coachella.
That had a lot of credibility to them.
Yeah.
You know, and you couldn't get the state to do it.
I think it was 74 that the Catholic Conference endorsed the lettuce boycott.
Well, they had that lever, because I remember that the thing that I'm remembering is before we got the first great contracts and during that process, Steinberg and Bianco and Spoda, which I think were crucial, and we weren't in the mood to budge too much, and they made us budge just enough, and they made them budge too.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were effective. I also think they sort of kept things on a rather civil basis when some of those growers would just spit at us and look at us.
Yes.
Yeah. Just having the bishop around. Mm-hmm. And then there were some people to whom they appealed because of their egos, you know. Getting to McFarland and Delano and some of those growers, having the bishop floating around was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I think they could size up human nature pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get to be bishops for nothing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No doubt they didn't.
No, I think there were some pretty good politicians there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mahoney himself, you look back at the law, more work was done in those first 6 months when Mahoney was chairman than has been done since.
chairman of...
AARB.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, remember, I think Roger played a crucial role. That the growers didn't buy him as a credible source of, you know, decisions, but I think he was dynamite. I think that he... That board was, well, the first place that board was amazing. It was Mahoney as chairman, Leroy was on it.
Leroy was on that board?
Yeah.
Good grief.
Leroy was on the board. Joe Groden, a guy named Ortega, who was caught with some little boy in a hotel in Sacramento and disappeared. Remember that guy?
Yes.
Joe Ortega, a real nice guy, yeah. But sick. And the grower rep was a guy named Dick Johnson. Those guys did, and Mahoney was the chairman. And he whipped that board into pretty good shape. And they cranked out hundreds of representation. You know, there were, I guess, 10 years of organizational pressures were released when the law was passed, is what happened. Because you had that whole burst of election activity, right? Well, the board cranked out decisions faster than hell, if you think about it. Because we got certified out of Salinas and we were bargaining contracts in December when the law went into effect in August. I don't know what's going on with the board now, but you know damn well, even before Brown left, when there's still good folks on the board, they didn't work at that pace. Mm-hmm. He really got the job done. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How long was Mahoney chair, do you remember?
No, he was certainly, until the board went down, they lost their funding. I think he was chairman even after, because I think Leroy left at that point. Mahoney was chairman for a couple of years, mm-hmm. wasn't he? He was gone by the time the Pope said you couldn't serve in public office. I don't think that's the reason he got off. So I don't know what his tenure was, but I think he'd be interesting to talk to just in terms of, that's an important role he played, because that law, there was no guarantee that law was going to function. Mm-hmm.
You know. I tried to meet with him, so busy, but he said if I'd send him some questions, that he would put answers on a tape and send it back to me.
He would?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably worth doing.
So I should ask
Careful,
about
Roger,
that.
What, has he done it for Cardinal or something? Or what's going on here?
Well, I don't know. Yeah. He sort of quickly on the phone reviewed mm-hmm. his schedule, and it mm-hmm. was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
He said he didn't have a free opening until the 15th of June.
Really?
Which was pretty astonishing.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
I said that I couldn't wait that long.
Right.
I could have the book practically written by then.
Right.
But he said that he would answer the questions, and that was nice. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But what should I ask him about? I should ask about...
I think I should ask him how the work got done for 6 months of the board, what the problems were, what role he played in putting that board together. How did he tend... Did he or did he think his presence there established any credibility with either the farmer community or the grower community? I think it did. And the grower said it didn't. But basically, I'd like to know how all that... I think it's crucial to just sort of think about how all that work got done. I mean, they got out an incredible amount of work. It's true that Leroy and Groden were real good. As a matter of fact, that's probably one of the reasons that, you know, Caesar and Marshmallow are being sued for $27 million by Bruce Church for racketeering, labor racketeering, because we controlled the board. I wish we could have, but... first, we exercised undue influence over Jerry Brown in getting the law passed, and I don't know if he wrote opinions or controlled hiring. God knows. But the growers are still smarting because of that law. This suit's going on in federal court in Fresno right now. But I'd like to know, or if I were reading your book, what the role Mahoney played and how it worked. He also was crucial. You know, he was the secretary to the bishop's committee. So he has notes of all those attempts to put the table grape growers in the union together. He's got, I remember some meeting in Fresno where all sort of, it's amazing when it comes back and start thinking about this stuff. Corky Larson, some people came up from Coachella, and there were some Fresno people and Delano people, and I don't think that meeting went anywhere. You know, Higgins was taking almost a shuttle back and forth. Kircher's another person to talk to, too, if you get a chance. I think he's got a summer, you know, winter home in Florida.
Mm.
Yeah. Because Kircher helped put together the Bishop's Committee with Higgins. I think he helped set the thing up.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be interesting to know.
That was an ad hoc committee, right?
Yeah, it was. But there were all these meetings. How do we get them? Oh, well, Roger was the secretary of that. Sounded off on that. And I remember he taking notes all the time. Roger may have even been in the federal building in Bakersfield when they got the contracts with Bianco and Sway. The bishops were also involved with Steinberg. But I don't think that was a question of really doing too much. That was a question of just sort of presiding over it.
Bianca. Coachella also?
Yeah.
I'd forgotten that name.
Yeah.
Well, Mahoney must have been a kind of a low-key sort of in his support publicly if he actually got to be chairperson of that board.
Well, you know, Mahoney, when I first came to England, Mahoney was a bad word because he was, I forgot who the bishop was in Fresno before Donahoe, but just before I got in there, there was the Giorgio Teamster fight. Mm-hmm. And I think Mahoney was putting his blessing on some phony election Teamsters into Georgia with him. So he was educated during this process. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that Dolores, at least, and probably Caesar, if you ask him, I don't think that they would. Mahoney wasn't a friend in the union. And so he sort of moved. I always found him real. He was fair-minded when you laid the facts out. But I think one reason they could be a little. Their role was different. They could be effective in that capacity is because they weren't tied to the union the way Chris is.